Don't know what I was looking for when I went home. I found me alone. I'm sure back home they'd love to see it. That's Yellow Card. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Jays lost 11-7 yesterday, but the day around Rogers Center, the day around the Cincinnati Reds visit to Rogers Center, the day around Major League Baseball became about Joey Votto before the game when from the parking lot of Salem Field in Buffalo, Votto posted an Instagram story and caption announcing his retirement. That's it. I'm done. I'm officially retired from baseball. And then in the caption said, I'm just not good anymore. He spoke to media last night after the game. He rushed from Buffalo to Toronto, almost made in time for the game, had some car trouble, but spoke to some media, Shai Davidi, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Keegan Mathison, who's going to join us in a minute, about the decision to hang it up and end this pursuit of an MLB comeback that has been injury-plagued and plagued by poor performance. And the overarching theme from Joey Votto's comments are that he just couldn't get to where he wanted to be competitively. Yes, there are some who will make the argument that the Blue Jays could have called him up for a sort of ceremonial appearance against the Reds. Then you get into, you know, is that something Votto would have wanted given how competitive he's been and how important it was to him to always look and feel like a major leaguer? You know, he said it could be disrespectful to the game and disrespectful to the fans to do that if he wasn't up to a major league playing level. You know, there's also a small element of because he never actually played for the Blue Jays and wasn't on the roster, he technically now did do the thing where he spent his whole career with the Cincinnati Reds. If you open up the Baseball Reference or Fangraphs page, you'll see a couple Buffalo Bisons and Dunedin Blue Jays games there. But from a major league roster standpoint, ends up spending his whole career with the Reds, will go into the Hall of Fame, I would imagine. Once the 5-year minimum is up there, he will go in as a Cincinnati Red. Of course, he will go in as one of the greatest Canadian baseball players of all time, one of the greatest Cincinnati Reds of all time. And now he can just watch UFC and go to the Toronto Public Library and play chess and chill. It's not the worst thing in the world for someone who's 40 years old to do, I would imagine. Although, yes, it is, it's a disappointing end to what this year was supposed to be, where there were high hopes and fun hopes that Joey Votto could join this team at some point. He obviously hit the home run in his first plate appearance of spring training, getting a late start there, stepped on a bat, dealt with ankle injuries for months, as he talked about spending, you know, over 100 nights in a hotel room alone, trying to rehab back, trying to make it back through the minor leagues. And whether the game or the body or the age just wouldn't allow, he couldn't get to a level that he felt he would be able to make a major league return at. So Joey Votto hangs him up. The Blue Jays also lose 11-7 to the Reds in a pretty bad bullpen day for the Blue Jays. At least they had a bunch more home runs. We'll talk about some of the game stuff as well, but let's start it off on a Votto note. By the way, we're going to talk to Eric Kratz later in the show, who famously got into quite the argument with Joey Votto back in 2018. As producer Amit Mann pointed out to me, benches cleared, no fisticuffs thrown or anything like that. But we'll talk to him about his Joey Votto memories and whip around Major League Baseball, including a Yankees team that, man, Aaron Judge is like right there with his 2022 pace right now. It's ridiculous. We'll have Chris Black on after a couple weeks of doing tennis coverage. We'll have Annie Rogers of Royals.com on to talk about a team that looks pretty comfortably headed to the playoffs and might have an MVP argument against Aaron Judge and Bobby Witt Jr. But right now, let's bring on Keegan Mathison, who was down at the park last night, of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. He joins us now. Keegan, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Blake, how are you today?
I am I'm good. I am 38 years old. Joey Votto is 40. I think you are somewhere south of me in terms of age. But when you see someone at 40 hang him up, how tempted are you, man, to just be like, you know what? I could live a life of leisure from here.
Man, take me back to the COVID years covering this team. I think I've stood in that same parking lot and wanted to quit. So I respect it. But it's amazing to see that come up last night and how this all played out over the year. It's not how anyone expected. I do like, Blake, that you mentioned off the top that Joey Votto now gets that clean Baseball Reference page. I don't think an 0-for-4 one game played would have helped much about that. And I'm glad that Joey Votto got here and spoke last night, because the moment that Joey Votto decided to retire, everybody seemed to be a psychological expert on the mind of Joey Votto, which, my goodness, is a tough thing to be. He's an interesting, unique cat. So I'm glad that he got to speak on it and give his actual reasons for why this happened, so that we have that from him. And not that everybody's happy, but I think that everyone can be satisfied with how this ended, and an incredible, incredible career of someone who for two decades, a full generation of baseball, was one of the best, most interesting hitters in the entire sport.
And most interesting hitter is right. And if you were going to pick someone who maybe represents the era from, say, 2008 to 2015, where the baseball world kind of, you know, whatever pockets were still holding out, kind of gave up and accepted that, yeah, getting on base is the most important skill you can have. Not making outs is really, really important. And even if you're a 25 homer, 85 RBI guy, if you have a 440 OBP, you're really, really, really valuable. We can go back to, I think it was 2017, when it was him and Giancarlo in the NL MVP. And Giancarlo Stanton had like almost 60 home runs and 130 RBIs. But Votto had him beat by like 60 points of OBP and beat him in OPS too. And it's like, you know, by wins above replacement, it's like right there. But Votto, a really interesting avatar for this era of baseball where obviously power and run production and the ability to hit for extra bases are still very important. Those things as a threat at the plate are how you're also able to become an on-base machine, because pitchers will pitch carefully around you and things like that. But a good avatar for the value of getting on base and just how elite a skill winning the pitcher hitter tete-a-tete is. I don't know that we've ever seen someone in this era who can outthink a pitcher and outmaneuver a pitcher in that one-on-one battle quite like Joey Votto could.
I feel like he's what the Blue Jays are chasing every day. They look at a prospect, they acquire a player. He and players like him have really shaped player development, have shaped how front offices view value in this era. And I think you can really see this, Blake, when you get to his Hall of Fame case, which I'm sure will be a big discussion in the coming days, coming years.
He's in.
If you put, absolutely. But I think if you put Joey Votto's numbers 20 years ago, people are saying, well, where's 500 homers? Where's 3,000 hits? Where's one of these milestones? I think we've evolved in that thinking now. Hall of Fame voting is incredibly flawed, and I don't like it, but I think that voters on the whole have come around to that thinking, the more metrics-based modern analytics thinking, even some older writers who have been around a long time. And I think the appreciation for Votto will be there now that maybe wasn't when his style of play came into the league 20 years ago as a young rookie. So an incredible career that spanned a whole era. I mean, a lot of guys don't do this 17, 18, 19 years in the big leagues anymore. It is incredibly hard, especially as pitchers are throwing 100. The eyesight, the hand eye that's involved in that is absolutely incredible. So, man, a hell of a career, something that was amazing to watch. And if nothing else, Blake, I'll always have, what was it, March 17th, I think, in Clearwater. That home run, I believe it was just myself and our friend Jason Stark was there, and whoever was stuck with me that week in spring training from Sportsnet, whether it was Arden or Ben, I forget at the time, but the three of us speaking with him after the game, I remember him saying his ankle hurt like the Dickens and he would be back in a couple of days. It didn't work out, but that was still a magic moment. That home run off Zach Wheeler, the first pitch, that's something I'll always remember.
And he's had a lot of those, man. He's had, obviously, the moments when he's come to Toronto as a member of the Cincinnati Reds. Pretty big World Baseball Classic moments. Obviously, he had that, you know, at least his goodbye to the Cincinnati Reds at the end of last year was very, very fitting, where the writing was on the wall that if he was going to continue his career, it wouldn't be in Cincinnati. But he got the goodbye with the fans, the very emotional last game there. So he's had, and again, wins an MVP. Maybe the Reds didn't have as much success as you would like to have when you have a Hall of Fame face of the franchise for almost 20 years. But that is not a Joey Votto problem. That is not a one-man solution there. So you did speak to Votto last night. He spoke to you guys. For anyone who hasn't seen the quotes or read your story at BlueJays.com yet, can you walk us through or paraphrase us for us a little of what Votto went through? And you know, obviously, even with Votto's explanation, people are going to see the timing of this Red series and think, okay, well, that was the target then. If the Jays weren't going to do it then, or Votto wasn't ready then, maybe that was it all along. How did Votto explain his process to you guys?
Yeah, he really expanded on the Instagram caption, I think, and got to the heart of why this was not something that lined up for him either. I get it. There are 500 reasons to dump on the Blue Jays front office, and there have been 500 openings to do so. I've been in a lot of them. This isn't one of them, I don't think. This is something that involved Joey Votto, and the entire time, Blake, I've had to ask John Schneider, poor John Schneider, 50 different times this year, where's Joey Votto? How's his ankle? Is he coming? How's his ankle? And I'm sure Schneider was exhausted by those questions as well along the way. You're talking about a guy who's rehabbing in single A, but it's Joey Votto. And Votto was the guy driving this entire process from the beginning. He's the guy who called Ross Atkins and said, I want to come try out for the Blue Jays. Like, this has been his idea most of the time. And if it had aligned for both sides, fantastic, but it didn't, including Votto's side of this. Now, he said in his Instagram post that he wasn't good enough. Now, we know the numbers were not great down in AAA. They were not the numbers of someone who could have came up and helped the team actually win. So if he had come up, it would have been a couple of token ABs, everyone clapped for the Canadian, and let's move on. Well, he didn't think he had earned that or wanted that at the end of all of this. Maybe if he could have come up and played the last 6 weeks and really contributed, that could have been interesting. But I jump back to the month of March, sitting there in Dunedin, and this was a different organization back then. I mean, the shape of the roster and what Votto meant. At the time, A, the Blue Jays were supposed to be decent. That has not happened. The Blue Jays also had Daniel Vogelbach in camp, who was competing with Spencer Horwitz. So the thinking at that time was, hey, maybe Joey Votto builds up for a couple of months. If Vogelbach is not setting the world on fire as a platoon DH pinch hit type of guy, you bring Joey Votto up for the summer and let him be that high on base. Maybe he gives you a 700 OPS bat off the bench. That hasn't worked out. And with a young team right now, it didn't make sense. And I respect that Joey Votto saw that and that this is not the Blue Jays saying, hey, this is too awkward for us. But I respect that Votto was out in front of that and acknowledged that this was something that wouldn't have fit for him, that he did not want to take an at-bat away from a young kid. He did not want to go out and put up an 0-for-4 for fans who surely would have shown up and bought tickets. A few would have bought a jersey if they haven't already. And he is someone who is extremely aware of the game. And I do not mean balls and strikes and who won last night. The whole world's already forgotten that. If you hadn't said it was 11-7 last night, I've already forgotten that. But he's aware of the game in the big picture, the grand scale, what it means to reach the big leagues. And he has a respect for that. And I think by doing what he's done and ending it this way, he's showing more of a respect for the game. He goes out on his terms, even though they're not his ideal terms. And he gets to live as a lifetime Cincinnati Red with a damn good career.
It's not the ideal way to go out again, given the decisions that were made to get to this point, but he's wrapping it up in a pretty good way here, and the career is what it is. And yeah, that Buffalo Bisons Votto jersey, to those who bought it, it's going to go hard. It's going to be right up there with a Vlad Guerrero Sr. Las Vegas 51s jersey. It'd be good. So last one on Votto before we actually do talk a little bit about the game and the guys who are here. You guys spoke to a couple Reds players as well. I don't know how many of those scrums that you were in, but when you talked to John Schneider about what spring training was like, a couple of the Jays about what spring training was like, some of these Reds who got to play with Votto, Luke Maley, who got to, you know, really pick Votto's brain, the reverence that his peers and his teammates have for him, how important a piece of the Joey Votto story is that as well, that level of respect from everyone inside baseball, especially those who got close to him? Mm-hmm.
Massive. And you know, reading back through a lot of the coverage from Reds writers, from our Mark Sheldon, who spoke to a lot of those Reds players, it's important that this happened in Cincinnati and not New York, because there's an element of Joey Votto being the small town hero. He's the local hero in Cincinnati, which is not a bustling metropolis. When I pick out my vacation spots in the offseason, Blake, I don't go to Cincinnati. I say that lovingly. Maybe that's the softest way I can say it. But Cincinnati had Joey Votto. For almost 20 years, they had the best, weirdest, coolest, most interesting baseball player in the league in Joey Votto. So that strengthened the connection, I think, between team and city and player that is really difficult to find in a massive market. It's a very intimate connection, I think, between a player and an organization. And that trickles down to players, to staff. We heard it from a lot of Blue Jays players, just being around him for a little bit. There's something so unique about him. This is not your average 32-year-old veteran middle infielder signing who comes in and comes out and you forget about them. There's a lot of Blue Jays players now in single A Dunedin, in the Florida Complex League, in AAA who are going to be telling this story for 20 years. I got to play a couple games with Joey Votto. Hey, look at this screenshot of a lineup from April 2024. I know I flamed out when I was 22 years old, but I played with Joey Votto. Look at this lineup. Those are the stories that these guys are going to be telling for a long time, long after they're in baseball. A lot of those guys won't make the big leagues, but they played with Joey Votto. And it's the impact he left on a lot of players was fascinating. I think you're going to continue to hear a lot about that in the next few days. I'm interested to see what Kratz has to say about that as well. But the impact on players was so unique, and the impact on an organization, I think, was even more unique. Because, again, Cincinnati instead of New York, that's a completely different relationship. And what he meant to that city, that team, does not get replicated often. And in modern baseball, with how players move around maybe a bit more now, you probably don't see it very often again.
No, it's hard to, I mean, baseball's economics maybe more than any other sport, especially if you're not like an absolute superstar. Yeah, you're probably going to bounce around at some point. So this Reds team, you know, didn't have a ton of playoff success under Joey Votto, which again is not just the fault of Joey Votto. They did make four playoff appearances during his career. They just missed last year, which would have been, you know, I think that was probably an even better out had they won that playoff race and made it in and you could exit after a playoff game. This is a Reds team now that is trying desperately to hold on to a little shred of playoff hope. They won last night. They beat the Jays 11-7. That is a lot of offense for the Cincinnati Reds to put up. In addition to Ellie De La Cruz getting the 2060 marker, just the fifth player in Major League history to do so, just the eighth time in league history it's happened. Of course, Ricky Henderson did it multiple times. On the Jays side of that one, Yariel Rodriguez looked really, really good for a little bit there, and then it unraveled. And that has, you know, there have been games where Yariel Rodriguez doesn't look good at all, and games where he looks good into the sixth inning, and then probably the most common one is a game like this. What are you seeing from Yariel Rodriguez in terms of that struggle to put multiple good starts together, or, you know, get through what started to happen in the fifth inning there last night?
Yeah, there seem to be a few pitches that just get him pounded in these bad starts. It's not like Yariel Rodriguez is kind of sort of struggling every inning. He runs into these bad innings. He had that, whether last start or a couple ago, where he allowed the three home runs in Chicago, I believe that was, where I was watching that. It seems that Rodriguez gets bitten by a couple of bad pitches that he hangs, whether that's being too aggressive or too fine, he needs to figure out. But it's frustrating to watch at times because I really like Yariel Rodriguez as a pitcher. Like, I really like him long-term for the Blue Jays. He was the signing that I think brought the most upside to this team over the offseason, and this team needs upside. They need more signings like Rodriguez, where you can really cash in, really find more value than you're paying for, which is the goal every single time. But Rodriguez needs to avoid those bad innings, those bad stretches where he's leaving a couple pitches over the heart of the plate. That's very difficult given his style, which is really aggressive. His entire personality, his entire pitching style is based on aggression and intensity. He's not trying to paint corners and be cute with his pitches. He's trying to go right at guys. And if you're going right at hitters, unless you throw 100, you got to keep it off the middle of the plate. He's struggled with that a couple of times lately. I still struggle myself, Blake, to try to figure out how much weight I put into this at the end of this year with Rodriguez, given that he did not pitch professionally last year, given how strange a year this has been for him. I'm putting some weight into it, maybe not as much as I would if we were seeing this from a Barrios or someone more established. But it is one of those things he's going to need to shake if he is going to last as a starter in Major League Baseball and be a legitimate 160-plus inning starter. This is kind of the one thing he needs to shake. Those ugly innings, those late blow-ups where he just gets too much of the plate.
It's a tough one. And look, this is a guy who, again, is effectively a Major League Baseball. He's not a professional baseball rookie, but he's a Major League Baseball rookie and didn't pitch last year. So you would expect some bumps with this kind of stuff. It's not going to be, you know, and like you said, long-term, Yariel is still Yariel. The stuff you're building on there is impressive, but yeah, you got to learn how to figure this stuff out. And that's probably what we're watching most the rest of the way with him. The bullpen behind him obviously also did not do him any favors. He comes out of that game with two runners on and then Brendan Little and Eric Swanson allow those runners and more to score. Zach Pop allows Ellie De La Cruz solo home run as well. And now we're headed for a bullpen day today, potentially. I mean, it's a TBD, and they wouldn't give all that much away. Technically, Jake Bloss would, like, be on turn if they wanted to call him up. What do you there's not much to look for from this bullpen right now. There are small things, Tommy Nance's curveball, Brendan Little's ground ball rate, things like that. But with the state of this bullpen heading into a bullpen day today, I don't really know what I'm asking other than this is going to be tough. But how much churn do you expect the next little bit? Like where the bullpen is, even heading into a bullpen day here and then a doubleheader Monday, it's been pretty heavily worked because the starters haven't given a ton of length the last little bit.
Yeah, this is going to turn over a lot. It probably won't be pretty. Probably won't be great. We'll see. But the bullpen, Blake, more than anything else, is where I struggle or maybe argue with myself about finding what to care about. And I say that carefully because I never want to fall into the trap of saying, oh, there's nothing to care about on this team. That's completely wrong. It bugs me when people say that, especially if they're covering a team. There's always something to care about. This time of year is just as interesting as a postseason run, if you let it be. There's a lot happening on this team. But elsewhere on the roster, that's easier to see. You see the young infielders. You see Joey Loperfido. You see Yariel. Those are easy storylines to point forward into 2025. When I look at the bullpen, I don't exactly know how to do that at this point. Eric Swanson would be one example. A good finish from him would be absolutely massive for next year because he's not just a reliever. He's a reliever who can pitch in the eighth or ninth inning. You can find relievers. You can't find a lot of the eighth and ninth inning guys. All of the other names you're going to see rolling through are guys who are competing to have maybe a shot next spring. It's pretty much open tryout season. And if somebody shows the Blue Jays a good stretch, a good month, which is what being a reliever is all about, suddenly they get a shot at winning that sixth, seventh, or eighth job next spring. So I think mentally I'm allowing relievers to fall off a bit quicker. If they have a rough stretch, okay, it's probably waiver churn time anyways. But if a guy can get hot and have a few good outings in a row, we've seen that from certain guys, from Ryan Burr, from some others. You can get momentum pretty quickly. If you give John Schneider a couple of clean innings, he's going to keep throwing you out there no matter what. But this bullpen is in such a strange spot right now because there aren't many guys in it outside of Swanson and Chad Green who are going to matter much to the MLB club next year. Like this team needs to add 3, 4, 5 legitimate MLB relievers next year. That's going to be a massive turnover. Bullpens are hard enough to predict, as we've learned this year. But I think you're going to see a lot of new faces, Blake. And I think that, you know, I'm not an immaculate grid guy. I try to keep baseball out of my, you know, my mornings, my life when I'm at home. But I think in 5 years when we are, you know, sitting at a bar having a beer and we look back on who played games for the 2024 Blue Jays, there's going to be a lot of names I don't remember covering necessarily with one or two games pitched for this team.
There are 16 relievers right now on the 40-man roster or 60-day IL. Obviously, you know, not even 8 of those are probably going to be on the roster next year. So get ready for the pre-Rule 5 deadline DFA churn as well. But yeah, Jose Quas, Jerry Rodriguez, Luis Frias, Easton Lucas, Brendan Eisert, Hagen Danner, Paolo Espino, all possible AAA churn guys who are on the 40-man right now. And that's before mentioning Jake Bloss, who obviously is not in the same group as those guys. He's in next year's rotation conversation. Before I let you go here, let's end on a positive here. We'll bookend how bad the bullpen is with the Joey Votto positive and the Ernie Clement positive. You wrote about this last night. Also, great job. I know you had to pivot and write a Joey Votto story as well coming out of that game, but you still got the Ernie piece up. Ernie Clement homers again yesterday. He walks again yesterday. He's walked in 2 consecutive games, the league's lowest walk rate. Man, you wrote about it. He's excelling in an everyday role here. I think probably most people understand that even if he's really, really good the rest of the way, you know, maybe he's like a very luxury bench piece next year. But what have you made of what Ernie's been able to do, not just for this year's team, but like for his major league career? This is a guy who got double DFA'd in 2022.
Yeah. He's been so impressive lately. And that's why even after the Votto news broke, I kind of insisted on still writing a bit of a Clement story because he deserves that coverage, I think, at this point. And I went back to a conversation Ernie and I had in spring training when he was competing for that final job on the bench, competing with guys like Horwitz, some veteran minor league signings. And he was iffy if he was going to make the roster. Now he's an everyday player. He's always had an elite contact rate, but now he has a bit of pop. Ernie Clement's not going to hit 25, 30 home runs. Not going to happen. But he needs to do just enough to not be a slap hitter. And he's doing that. He's doing that just enough now. On top of that, he's an incredible athlete. This guy can shoot par on the golf course. He plays hockey. He plays basketball. Like, he's just a really good all-around athlete, Ernie is. And you see that transfer to the baseball field. But a good defender at multiple spots, who you can take off the bench and put in. He's not going to strike out. Incredibly low strikeout rate, incredibly low walk rate. One of the most unique offensive profiles in the league, frankly. And when I look to next year, Blake, ideally the Blue Jays put themselves in a spot where not everybody needs to know how to play second base. Ideally, they find a couple of guys who play one position and stay there because they can actually hit. That's the perfect scenario for this team. A left fielder, maybe a third baseman, we'll see. In that situation, I think Ernie Clement is a really, really valuable utility guy to have on the bench. Now, utility used to mean that you couldn't hit and you played 40 games a year. Now utility means something quite different, and it can be a compliment to a player. I think he fits the team very well, and credit to him, man. He was a minor league signing last spring, I believe, who I didn't give much thought to at the time. It was another one of those forgettable news releases, but he's played his way into this, and he hasn't been exposed by being a full-time player. A lot of guys, when they get this shot, you see why they didn't get this earlier. Ernie Clement is showing you that sometimes there's value to giving a guy a look, to giving him a shot. He's not the star of the team, but he's a very valuable part of this team, and he's showing that lately. Full credit's owed to him because he's earned every bit of this.
And you mentioned the athletic versatility there, basketball, golf, hockey, baseball. It kind of reminds me of you when it comes to, you know, fantasy. You're covering baseball, your fantasy football, dynasty teams in great shape heading into this year. How you feeling, by the way? I know this is like we're into like the 2-week stretch where everyone's going to be like, don't talk to me between the fourth and eighth inning because I got a draft going on here.
I absolutely had a draft going during a game the other night. I'm going to have one during a game this weekend. It's my girlfriend has gotten to the point where if I'm looking at my phone, she knows I'm negotiating a trade. Why are you in four fantasy leagues? She asks, but the Real Housewives have an OC, a New York, a Potomac, a Miami. Hey, there's room for all of this. You know, there's room for four or five leagues. It's okay. You can be in as many fantasy leagues as you want. There's no law against it. And I tell you what, it's going to be a good year because my offseason aligns perfectly with the opening to drink beer on the couch and manage fantasy football teams like it's real life. God bless.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Yeah, football season getting going here in a couple weeks. I think I have, my big one's on Sunday. So I gotta lock in here. I'm not prepped enough. Thank God Justin Boone exists over at The Score. Keegan, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, buddy.
You got it, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Keegan Mathison of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Again, a lot of great stuff from him on Joey Votto last night. A lot of great stuff from Shai Davidi on Joey Votto last night, all around baseball. See Trent Rosecrans, who was on our show earlier this week to set up the Red Series. We talked a little Votto. He had a great piece as well. Couple of more positive notes from the minors. Arjun Amala continues. I feel like I mentioned him every day on the show. He homered again yesterday. He remains like the hottest hitter at A-ball. Jace Berofin as well had a 4-hit game yesterday and is now on a 14-game hit streak during which he has OPS'd over 1,100. So maybe getting himself on the late season call-up or at least, hey, where is he going to get placed in 2025 radar there as well. Minor update. Bo Bichette has been hitting in the batting cages and taking grounders. He's expected to run over the next couple days. He's been down in Florida, could potentially join the team in Toronto this weekend to get checked out, but he's going to need a rehab assignment, obviously, and they're not going to rush that. So we'll see. Jordan Romano, by the way, just throwing plyo balls rather than baseball so far. They're both still down in Florida. We'll talk more Votto throughout the show. Eric Kratz is going to join us a little before 11 a.m. We'll get some of his Votto memories, a guy who's played against him a bunch. We'll talk to Chris Black of Sportsnet as well. When we come back on the other side, though, there is quite the MVP race brewing and quite the AL Central race brewing. Bobby Witt Jr. might have something to say about both. We'll talk to Annie Rogers of Royals.com about that as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Bear with me one second. I'm biting off a sneeze. The Jays lost last night. The Kansas City Royals won in a nice return for Johnny Cueto for the Angels visiting Kansas City, but always fun to see a player return like that. Johnny Cueto, obviously history with the Reds, who were here, who we talked about a lot. Obviously, the focus here in Toronto was on Joey Votto's non-return last night. So cool to see Johnny Cueto get a little standing ovation from the Kansas City Royals. Also, cool to see the Kansas City Royals stay red hot, coming off a five-game win streak. They'd lost one. They bounced back. They win again. They're only 2.5 back in the division, in addition to looking pretty good in the American League wild card race. Let's go down to KC. Let's learn about it. Let's talk to Annie Rogers of MLB and Royals.com. How you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I am good. I mentioned it off the top. How was the Johnny Cueto of it all last night, getting the little hat tip from the Royals crowd?
Yeah, the Royals crowd. I mean, they know what he did for him back in 2015. A really cool moment to see him come back. You know, the Royals have faced him before back in 2022, I think, with the White Sox, but this was the first time he got back to Kansas City in quite a while. And just a cool moment for him, and he gave a little hat tip to the crowd, and yeah, it was great, and for the Royals to bounce back, you know, overall, I think the crowd really liked that as well.
Oh, well, personally, I have no recollection of the Royals in the 2015 playoffs. I have blocked it out of my mind. We don't talk about that on this show. But the Royals that look headed for the playoffs again here. They're 3.5 up on the next wild card spot. They're only 2.5 back in the division, playing some pretty good baseball the last week or so here. How are you feeling in terms of that race? And you know, for this Royals team that is, you know, they maybe didn't come into the season as a favorite to make the wild card spot. They now maybe could take a crack at the AL Central the rest of the way here.
Yeah, we've been talking about the wild card so much because the Guardians got off to that great start, but the division is definitely in play. I mean, the Twins are right there too, and obviously they hold the tiebreaker with the Royals, so that's something to keep in mind. But the division is absolutely still up for grabs. No one has you know, won it yet, and the Royals are gunning for the division. They want that division title. It's going to be a really tough stretch here coming up. That's kind of the storyline. Overall, there's 20 games, I believe, against teams who currently hold the playoff spot. So it's another big test for Kansas City, but they feel the way that they've played all year, they're ready for it. And this is gonna make or break this stretch here, kind of who they are as a team and how far they can go.
Well, and you mentioned that stretch, and it also includes, I think, 7 against the Guardians. So if you're gonna win that division, that's while the schedule is tough, you do kind of control your own fate a little bit there. So look, obviously the headline item when it comes to the Royals is Bobby Witt Jr. He has been everything that was promised, maybe even more. Every night you're like, oh, here's an Aaron Judge stat, here's an Aaron Judge highlight, and Bobby Witt Jr. like right there with him when it comes to that AL MVP discussion. And as Francisco Lindor would remind everyone, the MVPs won in August and September, not in June and July. So we got a cool stretch run here. But what has the Bobby Witt Jr. experience been like this year?
It has been unreal. Every time he goes onto the field, you know he's going to impact the game in some way. That has been a lot of offense, for sure. But even if he goes 0-for-4, and he has had couple of hitless games, 25 of them this year, you know, that's not too many. But if he goes 0-for-4, he's gonna make a defensive play, he's gonna, you know, make some noise on the bases. So it's just been so impressive to watch him settle in, embrace, you know, being the face of the franchise here, and, you know, kind of lead this team to where they are right now. And you're right, MVP races are won in August and September, and it's going to be a really fun race over this next month or so between him and Judge, and see what the voters decide. I know people in Kansas City are excited about it. I think Bobby's excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, so you mentioned he's only gone to hitless in 25 games. I think it's, what, 5 10-game hit streaks that he's had this year, that level of consistency. And then obviously we know, you know, defense and base running is not supposed to slump. He's been pretty, pretty good across the board there. He might be like the fastest player and the best defender in baseball on top of maybe winning the batting title. It's ridiculous. What do we know about Bobby Witt Jr., the dude, like underneath? Like obviously the baseball talent is there. I know you've talked to him a bunch. You've written about him a bunch. Anthony Castrovince kind of went inside a little bit more recently. What do we know about him outside of the field or the personality that kind of, I'd imagine, has a huge impact on that Royals clubhouse as well?
Yeah, Bobby is one of the most genuine players I've ever covered. He loves the game of baseball, and you hear that a lot from players, right? They grew up loving this game. This is their job now. They love it. Bobby embodies that. I mean, you see him run out onto the field with a huge smile on his face every day. I mean, he just loves the game, and it's really fun to see because you don't often see that level of joy, and it's hard not to have it be contagious. And I think his teammates kind of rally around that as well. You know, obviously he's playing so well. He's the leader of this offense, of the defense, of that clubhouse, but they love the way that he plays. He plays hard every single day. He wants to play every single game, every inning. He has done that so far. And, you know, it's just been really impressive to kind of watch him come into his own. You know, he had that huge contract this offseason, and he just never missed a beat after it. And it's just been really cool to watch him kind of embrace Kansas City as home.
Well, that's a lot of fun. I'm sure it's great for the fans to have someone who's doing that. In reading your work, it has seemed like, and maybe he's just like, I've done this enough on the basketball side that like, maybe he's just a good quote. But Vinny Pascantino, is the read from outside right that he's kind of taken on maybe a larger leadership role in that clubhouse than you'd expect from a younger player? Like, it does seem like he's the voice of the Royals anytime I fire up an article.
Yeah, he's a good quote for us, you know, mainly because he's good at putting things into perspective. And that makes for some good quotes. He's a funny guy. He's got a lot of character, but he also has, you know, a deep competitive fire, and he wants to win. And so he's a good guy for us to go to. We've had our differences. He's open to conversation, which I love. It challenges me as a reporter. I'm making sure I'm prepared every single day. It's been fun kind of seeing him. I talked about Bobby coming into his own, but Vinny Pascantino has done that as well. And I think, you know, the clubhouse overall, like, there are veteran leaders in that clubhouse, but they've given these young guys kind of the leeway to take over the clubhouse and make it their own in a year that, you know, they're playing really well as well.
There's also, you know, on the position player side, Sal Perez, who I don't know about the leadership perspective. I've never gotten to know him, but it's pretty ridiculous that at age 34, he is having, I mean, when we control for league factors, like arguably his best season, I don't know that anyone would put any season above his 48 homer year a couple years ago. But again, like an 800 OPS getting this done at age 34. How is Sal Perez keeping this up? I know the move out of catcher probably helps a little bit, but it's, you know, he's still playing there semi-regularly. It's pretty remarkable to see him do this still.
Well, I think he is feeding off of this season. I mean, he loves to win too. We talk about Bobby, like, loving the game. Salvi is just, he embodies that as well. The passion that he plays with. And I think the Royals feed off of that, but you know, Salvi feeds off the Royals playing well as well, and he's happy to bring them back into the postseason again. You know, he's loving this season, and I think it's showing at the plate. And you know, we talk about leadership. Salvi, that's his clubhouse. This is his team. He's the captain, and you know, he's letting Bobby and Vinny kind of start to speak their minds a little bit more and become leaders themselves. But you know, it's just a really cool dynamic to see.
On the pitching side, you know, a couple of vets on that side as well. I looked today, and obviously Michael Lorenzen was added at the trade deadline, so he hasn't been there all season. But there are 5 starters on this Royals team that have gone 127 innings or more and have ERAs of 3.50 or lower. It is, I thought last year the Jays having four guys go 30 starts with ERAs like four and below was never going to be matched again, given the current era of how starting pitchers get handled and things like that. But five full-time guys with really good performance on the season. I mean, how much of, like, obviously Bobby Witt is going to be in the MVP. He's going to be top two in MVP balloting. That is the headline item. But the depth of this rotation, I think, is a little slept on, right?
Well, it's the reason that they are where they are. I mean, yes, the offense has been good. Bobby Witt Jr. has been great. But the rotation giving them quality starts and going deep into games almost every night has been the reason that the Royals are winning games. I mean, it's the biggest difference from last year in this turnaround that we talk about from 106 losses to where they are now. It's because of the rotation. It's completely different. It's new faces, a completely new, you know, approach to the game. And, you know, it's been really impressive to watch as the season has gone on deeper. You know, they're hitting, you know, Seth Lugo has gone past his career innings workload, and Cole Reagans has blown past his, but they're still pitching at a high level. It's been really impressive, and they don't want to stop that now. So, yes, the depth of the rotation has been a really important storyline, and I think it's the reason the Royals are where they are.
So this is what we call one of those good problems, but let's say the Royals – get a wild card spot, but they don't win the division and they have to play a 3-game wild card series. What are you doing there? Because they've got five guys who all have like basically the same stat line. I think, you know, probably Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans are an easy choice there, but then you get into Lorenzo, Waka, Singer. I know Lorenzen has some experience coming out of the bullpen more recently. What do you think that would look like for the Royals? Or I mean, it's too early to answer, but right now, what do you think it would look like?
Yeah, I think a lot of it actually will have to do with the team that they're facing. They are a big matchup team. They like playing those matchups. And let's say, like, you look at some of the teams that are in that race right now, especially the wild card race, like the Twins are really lefty heavy. I would think that they would want Michael Waka to take over that, you know, one of those starts. The Orioles, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, are pretty lefty heavy as well. And they probably don't want Brady Singer to face all of those lefties. So they would maybe put him in the bullpen or what have you. That's to be determined, obviously. But I think a lot of it's going to come down to matchups. And you're right, Seth Lugo, Cole Reagans, probably their 1-2. And then that third starter, if they need it, would come down to what's the team they're facing like, what are the matchups like, and who gives them the best chance to get through to the next round.
So Zach Greinke was at the game last night. What do you think? Could he still give a, maybe not for a team like the Royals who have solid pitching, but Greinke strikes me as like, he's almost like the pitching version of Votto for me, where like Votto is like, yeah, of course he's still playing at 40. I wouldn't bet against him or whatever. I would imagine Greinke could still come in and just break off like a 55 mile an hour curveball that loops like 25 inches.
Oh yeah. I have no doubt about that. I think he is, you know, he was throwing, staying in shape earlier in the year. I think that's he's kind of gone back from that a little bit now as we get closer to the end of the year. But wouldn't surprise me at all if like we see him at some point, like in spring training on a minor league deal or whatever. Like nothing he does after covering him for a couple of years, and I know, you know, a lot of writers around the league have covered him, like nothing he does surprises me, or nothing he says surprises me. He's truly so unique. Super fun to see him. I know the Royals were pumped to have him, you know, have him watch the game, offer his insight, you know, whatever. He's a brilliant mind, and they love having him around. So whatever he does next, like, it's not going to surprise me at all.
And he threw 140 innings last year. It's not like he threw like 12 innings. Like he was, I mean, he wasn't that great, but he was around and he pitched a lot. Annie, thank you so much for taking the time out. Have a blast with this stretch run here.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Annie Rogers of MLB.com, of Royals.com. Yeah. Very, very fun Royals team right now. Bobby Witt Jr. pushing Aaron Judge for the Most Valuable Player Award. The Royals pushing the Guardians for the American League Central lead. There's a lot of fun stuff going on around baseball. We're going to recenter the conversation on Votto for a bit here, but then we're going to talk about some of those playoff races. Eric Kratz of Foul Territory is going to join us next. He has played against Joey Votto. He's had a dust up with Joey Votto. We'll get his perspective on Votto's career and then, yeah, talk about that Yankees team where Aaron Judge and Juan Soto are so good. Talk about an Orioles team that got walked off twice by the Mets in this same series. Check in on the NL West as well. And maybe talk some Ellie De La Cruz. He did join that 2060 club last night and should probably give him some airspace here. Eric Kratz joins us next. Chris Black later in the second hour as Jays Talk Plus rolls on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. A little skillet there playing us back. Jays lose 11-7 last night. Dropped 2-3 to Cincinnati Reds. They will start a four-game series against the Angels today at Rogers Center with the old battle between TBD and TBD. Couple of bullpen or surprise call-up days that we'll break down a little later in the show. Yesterday, yes, the Jays lose, but the headline item is the retirement of Joey Votto. Let's talk to Eric Kratz of Foul Territory about it. Eric, how are we doing this morning, man?
I'm awesome. And TBD is Terrence Brockington Deciphersis.
Perfect. Perfect. Do you, and some teams use TBA. I assume that's his cousin or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Eric, Joey Votto retires last night. I know you retweeted some stuff about it. I'm sure you guys are going to talk about it on the show today. Man, your thoughts when you heard that come down, when you saw Joey Votto's quotes himself on Instagram.
My first thought is congratulations to his career, obviously. My second thought is I hope he is happy. I hope he went out on his terms, you know, the way he wanted to go out, the way he wanted to feel about the end of his career, because I know how a lot of guys deal with that. I know how, you know, superstars deal with it. I know how nothing stars deal with it. And for over half of his life, he's been a professional baseball player. The beauty is, if he's happy about the way he went out, he'll be ecstatic about the rest of his life, the next career he gets into, whatever it is.
Yeah, no shortage of options for him. We'd certainly take him in the media. You know, he's got a lot of interest outside of baseball as well. Look, you played a good chunk of your career in the National League. You spent some time in the NL Central. No, you and Joey had a bit of a moment one game in 2018. What are some of your favorite Votto memories playing against him or just getting to see him?
The thing that I remember about Joey playing was the fact that you never knew what guy you were going to get up in the box. Some days he was going to be a little more feisty. Other days he was just like this most relax, laid back, hey, whatever happens, happens. But he was going to compete every single at bat, every single time out there. When I was creating my scouting report for the game, I was like, Joey Votto. I think probably Jay Bruce probably did better when I was back there catching, but Joey Votto just never gave in. And there's only a few guys that I can say never gave in at bats. And I always put him and Paul Goldschmidt up there as guys that didn't matter if it was the first inning, didn't matter if it was 7-0. It didn't matter if it was the 14th inning, just always giving really tough at bats. And in 2018, we had a little altercation, but we figured it out. It was really just, you know, it was a conversation about how the Canadian dollar and the government was really, really strengthening. And he appreciated all of the insight that I had there.
Yeah, look, you know, politics in baseball, that happens even in the at-bat. Okay, so I did want to dig in a little bit more. You mentioned it there. When you're creating the scouting report, it's a different Joey Votto every time. You know, so much of the game, especially as we've come to appreciate the value of a walk more, is that pitcher-batter interplay. And the catcher obviously has a role in that. Where did Votto rank? Like, is it him and Goldschmidt and then a gap in everyone else when it comes to outthinking the pitcher and the catcher, or at least trying to keep up with what the pitcher and catcher are doing?
Outthinking? I mean, man, there's some really bad players who outthought a lot of things. Outthinking is not necessarily the goal in baseball, but preparedness and stubbornness to your approach is something that separates the best hitters. And you're talking about a guy who his Hall of Fame candidacy is going to be fiercely debated because there's going to be people who never took a walk and got way more hits than he got and are not in the Hall of Fame. So that's what people are always going to lean on is all the hits. The reality is a hit, a single, is exactly the same value as a walk. And people will say, no, I can never believe that. Okay, then you probably didn't walk a lot. I didn't walk a lot, and I understand that a hit, a single, is exactly the same value as a walk. And there is nobody better. Nobody better in my generation of playing that knew the strike zone and knew how to and was able to take a walk.
It's crazy. And if you add the walks and hits together, which obviously we don't do, but he had 3,500 when you put them together. So he was on base an awful lot. Well, thanks for sharing that, Eric. Let's pivot to some guys who are playing now. Aaron Judge playing pretty well. Juan Soto playing pretty well. I think it was Mike Petriello of MLB.com tweeted a stat yesterday that when we adjust for league average, so we're looking at OPS plus, the list of teammates who have performed at this level together, Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig four times, and then Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. Man, what do you do if you're an opposing team? I know there's seven other guys in the lineup, but how terrifying is this right now if you're going up against the Yankees?
How terrifying are the seven other guys? That's my question to you. Like, and that will depend on the pitchers that's on the mound. Listen, like, the thing that I think is crazy about these two is the fact that they're doing it back to back and they're doing it in a lineup that has not necessarily kept up their end of the bargain. There's been some guys that have had some hot streaks and have really helped this. Verdugo for a minute, Austin Wells recently, who has been both of their protection. But here's my goal when I'm facing those two. My goal is to have a 3-run lead so that I can go right after those guys. And ultimately, they're not going to hit a home run every single time up. It looks like it, but they're not going to. And I'm attacking the zones that I'm strongest in as a pitcher, as a catcher, whoever's out on the mound. And I am attacking those zones in the strike zone because we just talked about walks with Joey Votto. You cannot give the best plate discipline currently in the game in Juan Soto a free pass because Aaron Judge can drive him in from the parking lot. It doesn't matter where Juan Soto is. He can drive him in from first base, second base, the dugout, the bathroom. It doesn't matter. He will hammer balls. And I think personally, I face Judgey differently when I'm in Yankee Stadium than when I'm in other parks, because Judge's ability to take the ball to the opposite field to me is more scary in Yankee Stadium, obviously, because it's shorter than facing Juan Soto in Yankee Stadium with that short porch. So you have to be fluid. You have to move. You're talking about two guys that are up there with Ruth and Gehrig. Yeah. Like you can't face these guys and say, you know what? Most likely we'll get them here. We'll try our best. No, like you have to make the seven other guys beat you.
Yeah, and those seven other guys, you know, they've juggled the lineup a ton, right? Like Gleyber Torres is back at the top of the order. It was Verdugo for a bit. Obviously, Stanton's back now, and he can still get into one. He's the Statcast king, but, you know, maybe not as scary as he once was. If you were the Yankees, how tempted would you be to try Jason Dominguez in one of these spots? I know he hasn't, like, killed it at AAA since coming back from injury, but just to give a different look, to try to add a little youth speed athleticism in there somewhere.
Speed and athleticism sounds like a Blue Jay issue too, since since we're not talking Jays right now, but I think that it's intriguing. I haven't looked at what Jason's doing in AAA.
He's recently been okay.
Okay. So you already have okay up in the big leagues. You already have big leaguers. Your hope is that when Anthony Rizzo comes back to Anthony Rizzo land, he's helpful because he's going to put together good at-bats. To me, I would put Jason Dominguez in there, not for his speed, not for his youth and athleticism, but if he's able to put together good at-bats, because wherever he slots in, I don't care if he's slotting in the seven hole or leadoff, he is essentially, and this is how the other seven guys in the lineup have to look at it, they're hitting to get Judge and Soto back up. Because every time they get on, they're looking to get Judge and Soto back up. You don't manage that way, but as a hitter, you have to look at it that way. If I'm able to work a walk in the seventh spot in the lineup with one out, now all of a sudden we go 8-9, maybe there's two outs in that situation, and you're one hitter away from that tandem, that crew, that you don't have enough open bases and you have to pitch to Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. So to me, if his at-bats in the minor leagues are showing me that he's doing damage on pitches in the zone and he's not chasing out of the zone, then I bring him up. And I bring him up to relieve the guys who have been chasing, because you can't have guys in your lineup that are chasing when you have studs in the 2-3 spot in Soto and Judge, because then you sit there and you go, well, I don't ever have to throw those guys strikes because I'm not going to have to throw the other seven guys strikes. So that's the only way I call him up. I haven't seen his development this year. It kind of sucked. They called him up for one game. So yeah. I assume like he was the best option. And for one day that he was going to be the best option. I just don't like that when you call in young guys up and kind of like maybe messing with their psyche a little bit. But I know Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman, they talk all the time. So I'm sure they didn't call him up and be like, hey, congratulations, you're up in the big leagues. Hopefully they called him and were like, hey, we need you for one game. It's a Williamsport game. You're our best option. Go get him.
Yeah, and that was, you know, obviously a 27-man roster for that one. So, yeah, I'd have to, you know, surface-level stats look okay. I think since he came back from injury, he's hit about 270 with a bunch of stolen bases, but I'd have to dig in more on the chase. And, yeah, it's a great point. If you're the difference between Soto getting up four times in a game and five times in a game, even if you don't hit a home run yourself, that could be the difference. Elsewhere in that American League East race, the Orioles just got walked off twice in the same series by the Mets. Before we talk to Orioles side, Did you dig the Jesse Winker celebration, the like halfway down the first base line? That it felt October in that ballpark, at least watching on TV.
I didn't think it could get more electric than the Francisco Alvarez walk off two nights before or the night before. Yeah. I'm not sure. Whenever he walked it off, he was like, he did the whole like pound his chest. This is our how, whatever he said. I don't know what he said, but it was electric. And then as a bald guy, I am like this is like, there ain't nothing going on up there. All right. Not just hair either. Like, we are talking about him throwing his helmet and that hair was electric. Like all athletes want to be rock stars and all rock stars want to be athletes. And he had a rock star moment right there. And my favorite part too was he was almost the first base then. And he pulled his elbow guard off and threw it down. Like, it was like the next thing that needed to be taken off. Like, it was electric. And I love that. And I love that it's happening in New York, because that stadium holds over 50,000 people. When it is, and it feels like the upper deck is going to get hit by planes when the planes are flying by. But it also feels like the fans are like on top of you. So it sucks it was a day game, because it wasn't as big a crowd as it could have been. But the rest of the season, I'm going to two places. I'm going to Citi Field and I'm going out to Petco Park, because those places are rocking right now.
Safe to say that, I mean, we can't pick favorites too much, but the Mets only a game and a half back of that very injured Braves team. You're a little lean toward the Mets side pulling that wild card race off?
No, I'm still thinking the Braves are going to do it, but It's going to be an awesome place. I mean, it's only like 2 hours from my house here.
Nice.
So like Citi Field, I might be able to hear Citi Field. I just don't think they're going to have enough to overtake the Braves. But man, it's going to be fun to watch.
On the Orioles side of that, again, getting walked off twice, Sir Anthony Dominguez gets acquired. And then they're like, first of all, red flag that the Phillies were just like, yeah, you could have Sir Anthony Dominguez. And then he gets the closer role and blows two in a week here. How worried should the Orioles be about this bullpen heading into the playoffs?
I mean, they went out and got Gregory Soto and Sir Anthony Dominguez from a team that is going to the playoffs. You know, they've been in our argument of best National League team all year, and they gave these two guys up. So this is all they were able to acquire. And I like the pickups for them. It was two guys that needed a change of scenery, but it was also two guys I've seen Sir Anthony, his progression from unbelievable when he first got called up, got injured, and then to just solidifying that role to a little bit of an up and down. This is the time of year that bullpens go up and down. Look at the Phillies, Alvarado. Alvarado is, he can't find the strike zone consistently right now. He's a four before three guy. He's going to throw four balls before he throws three strikes. And Sir Anthony had that early in the year. What I love to see about Sir Anthony is the fact that he came into Baltimore and he was lights out. He earned that closer's role early. And it was like four outings. Is that enough? It's enough on the Orioles staff who does not have a shutdown closer. You know what? He gave up two walk-off dingers. Brandon Hyde, that staff is going to have to sit there and go, are we okay with him giving up solo dingers in the ninth inning? Yes, because we need him out there. If he's giving up grand slams, three-run doubles after he walked the bases loaded, because that's what they have also. Gregory Soto, Craig Kimbrell. It's like it's 2023 Phillies bullpen south now in Baltimore. All these guys have the potential to be absolute elite shutdown closers. They've done it in their career. Kimbrell has done it more than all three of them combined, but they have to throw strikes. And so to me, I'm not super worried, more worried than I was before I got those guys. I think they upgraded. But what I'm worried about is, can Brandon Hyde and that staff see when they're not going well, see when they're not throwing strikes, see when they're up in the zone, see when Sir Anthony's sinker is flat and not giving that ground ball, getting that strikeout, and being willing to say, nope, you're out, bring the next guy in, because then the next guy's going to step up. And that's how you build that bullpen for the playoffs.
Yeah, Yenye Kano, hey, it's your day today. Let's see it. And yeah, you bounce it around, play the matchups, ride the hot hand. Before I let you go, Eric, you mentioned Petco as well there. This is a Padres team that's been so much fun. I know the Dodgers are just coming off a sweep, so they've stabilized a little bit at the top of that NL West. But what do you love about how this Padres team is playing right now? Also, is that a Padres hat that you have on? The yellow? No? Okay.
Not, it'd be sick if it was, but
I didn't know we had a that color camo Jays hat.
Listen, this is what I do. I'm a hatman. Because I got a head. I got a head for a hat and a face for sunglasses. So that's what I do. But no, it's not a Padres hat. What they're doing is exactly what they built this team for. I mean, think about it. They went out and got Manny Machado, they extended Fernando Tatis. Whatever you say about Fernando Tatis, he's not even in the lineup right now. They didn't stop. They got a Ha-Sung Kim, who hopefully the shoulder thing that he's got isn't severe, but they have Xander Bogaerts. All these trades and signings that they did, everyone's like, AJ Preller, he decimated this minor league system. He did decimate the minor league system, except he saved a guy. He saved one guy I'm sure teams were calling for, Jackson Merle, who was a shortstop and is now playing center field and is going to be National League Rookie of the Year, because I think the Pirates are going to shut down Skeens. And I also think Jackson Merle has done everything to take over the National League Rookie of the Year. So all that to say, they are an athletic team. I don't know what happened last year, but it's crazy to say you lost Juan Soto, you lost Josh Hader, you lost Blake Snell, and you are a better team this year. But I think this is the team that they built. This is the team that they wanted all those signings to come out to, and they're fun to watch. And I think they're fun to watch. Unfortunately, I am a backup catcher. I'll never be as athletic as these guys. But they're an entire team of shortstops. Look around this team. Xander Bogaerts, shortstop. Manny Machado, shortstop. Ha-Sung Kim, shortstop. Jake Cronenworth, when Tatis is out there, shortstop. Center field, Jackson Merrill. He was a shortstop last year in the minor leagues. Like, this team is so much fun, and the bullpen is shut down, closer, see you later for four innings.
It's pretty fun, and I actually just realized today that they just called up Mason McCoy as well, who's a bench. He's not gonna factor in, but they got another shortstop, a former Blue Jay there. Got a stat for you before I let you go here. This is from Chris Black, a producer at Sportsnet, who's coming on here next. He looked up the numbers of when you were catching Joey Votto plate appearances.
Apparently
it happened 51 plate appearances. He had a 431 on base, so pretty good, but only a 429 slugging. So damage minimized. How do you feel about that?
I feel great about it. My whole approach to Joey Votto, and I told him this after he was done, I said, Joey, I wanted you to pull a home run. That's all. Like, if we're going to throw, and the pitchers would always be like, what? I'm like, I want him to pull a home run because he never wanted to pull the ball. So I was okay with him getting a single, and I'm 100% okay with him taking his walk because that's what he's going to do. He's just going to take it. So to me, that's a success. That's a Hall of Fame. That's a Hall of Fame career for him. What was that? 850? Almost 900 OPS?
It's lower than his career mark. So I think you could take a W here too, right?
Love that. This is why I come on here, Blake. I appreciate you building me up.
Eric, thanks so much for doing it, man. Really appreciate it.
No doubt. Anytime.
Eric Kratz of Foul Territory. A lot of great stuff there on that show every day. It's a must watch. Okay, so that was from Chris Black. Let's take a break and let's talk to Chris Black. We'll get into some of our favorite Votto memories, favorite Votto stats. I've shared mine on this show before, but we'll get into a few more. And we'll talk a little bit about the game that was last night, how they're going to handle the rotation. Because, yeah, there is a game today. By the way, the Jays going with a TBD, whether you want to call it a bullpen day or we expect someone to get called up or something like that. We'll get into all of that. The Jays also have a doubleheader on Monday to keep an eye for. The reason it's a TBD today, by the way, is they decided to push everyone back a day. So 18 games in 17 days. Yes, you have 5 off days in September, but you have a couple veteran pitchers, a couple of young pitchers who, in the case of Yair Rodriguez, didn't pitch last year, or Bowden Francis, haven't gone 100-plus innings at all. So push everyone back a day, get a little additional rest. You're playing against an Angels team that's also doing a TBD day. We don't know on their side whether it's an opener ahead of Griffin Canning, who's due to start. It would be Reed Detmer's day in the minor leagues. Maybe there's a move coming there, but anyway, all that to say, makes sense. Take the long view. They're going to look for opportunities to limit the workloads of guys or just buy them an extra day. So we'll get into what that could look like. We'll talk more Votto with Chris Black on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. That's Raheem. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? In this case, the answer is Chris Black, who rejoins the show after a little bit of time away doing the tennis. Before we get to Chris Black, though, a note that I was talking about the TBD starter for the Blue Jays tonight, and we have an answer to that now. Ryan Burr is going to get the start. The Jays told us during the break there. Obviously, this is an opener situation. You have to go back to the year 2017 when he was in low A ball for the last time Ryan Burr went longer than 2 innings in an outing. So I think we can safely call this an opener day, and we'll see what follows. Chris Black is the closer on the show today. He joins us now. How are we doing, Chris?
I am no closer. I do not have enough velocity or the mindset to be a dominant closer.
But
I'll do my best.
You could do the 11:30 block, and that makes you the closer here. This is we're in Blue Jays territory where we just got to fill the innings this late in the year. You know, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Joey Votto retires last night. Obviously, someone you've watched your entire life, who you have a healthy respect for. We could talk some of the media side stuff as well. But your initial reaction when that news comes down last night, Votto's statement comes down.
I don't just have a healthy respect for it. I have like a healthy baseball crush on. He's always been one of my favorite players for a whole bunch of reasons. I heard Keegan on earlier. Like, he's right. He was one of the most interesting players. He thought about the game differently than most players. He could clarify what he thought about the game more than most players. Just cool to listen to, cool to watch. The Canadian factor as well. You know, he's known as the on-base walks guy, but to me, that's just a part of it. Even from a numerical perspective, to me, it was the lack of strikeouts too. You know, and then mixing in the power if it wasn't elite power. He had a 9-year stretch in the 2010s where he had more walks than strikeouts. Like, in this day and age, that's insane, especially from a guy who's productive. Like, this isn't Luis Castillo slapping singles around. Mm-hmm. Like, this was a productive 900 plus OPS guy, and he had more walks than strikeouts. So that part is just amazing to me. I wish there were a few postseason moments that we could all look back and remember. But for me personally, I'll always remember two things. And this is like the pinch me kind of career moments, like in this industry. 2017 World Series, Justin Morneau was working in the studio with us. And Votto just like happened to be in town and like came in and like watched a couple games with us in like kind of like a back room when we weren't like kind of on camera. And that was just amazing listening to those guys. I'm pretty sure I didn't say a word. Just listen to those guys talk baseball. And then 2020, I had Morneau. I produced an interview where Morneau interviewed Votto. And it's like a 15 or 16 in an interview. Like, it's kind of, Joey can be like kind of quiet sometimes in interviews and not give a lot. I think a lot of the times it depends on who he's talking to. And when he was talking to Justin, like, it's just obviously a healthy respect for one another. And like, they had an awesome conversation. It is up on YouTube. I posted a link to it yesterday. So if you have time, like, it's worth the listen, because they spend at least 5 or 6 minutes at the end. And this was 4 years ago, but they spent 5 or 6 minutes then talking about, you know, when do you know it's over? How do you decide? What will you want to be, you know, what will you want to be kind of the factors that go into making that decision? So it was just, it's a really cool listen. It was really cool to listen, to re-listen to it yesterday. So if you have time, you can go seek it out.
Okay. Yeah, it's great. I remember watching. I have not rewatched it, but I remember watching it at the time, and it was tremendous. So that's obviously very cool, and clearly Votto would have a future in media if he so chose.
If he wants it, yeah.
There's an open co-host chair right here, buddy. Anytime you want. Look, you're a Raptors guy. You're a UFC guy. We can talk about whatever you want, Joey Votto. Obviously, there would be. You know, he could go to the front office side as well. He could go to the coaching side. He could just like become the Toronto Public Library's biggest supporter and set a new record for career books taken out or something like that. By the way, we were talking earlier about, you know, obviously hits and walks, and they're close to equalness in value. That perception has changed over time. It's come to be more accepted. Joey Votto, I pulled the numbers during the break, has gotten on base the 98th most times in the history of baseball. So when we include walks with hits there, it's happened. He did it 3,500 times, and that is top 100 all time. So, yeah, don't let the 2,000-odd hits understate just how often Joey Votto was standing on base there. Do you have a favorite Votto stat? Because I have one. Maybe we have the same one. It wouldn't surprise me all that much if we did. But do you have one that sticks out to you?
One that stuck out yesterday when I was looking at some things, you know, Eric mentioned earlier in the last segment about battling and like never gave away an at bat. I think some lefties, when they face lefty pitchers, kind of are like, this is going to be tough, or, you know, like, you know, I'm not expected to get on base because I'm up against lefty platoon disadvantage. Votto has like I can't remember the exact number. I want to say 389 or something like that on base against lefties. And like the list all time of like best lefty versus lefty on base is like a whole whack of Hall of Famers. It's like Ruth, Gehrig, Barry Bonds, who should be in the Hall of Fame, Ty Cobb, and like Votto's ninth best all time. So to me, like that ties into what Eric's saying. That ties into the on base. But like a .389 on base career against lefties, I looked for context. There's only like one Blue Jay who's ever had a higher on base against lefties. And I'm not talking lefty versus lefty. I'm talking righties as well. It's Shannon Stewart. That's it. So like for context, like he got on base against lefties as much as any Blue Jay ever, lefty or righty. So like that sticks out to me. One of the best ever to get on base at a high clip.
Okay. That is a good choice. My choice is that in the seasons of 2010 and 2016 and 2018 and 2020, he did not hit a single infield fly in any of those seasons. He did not have a pop-up in the infield. All time in baseball history, he has the fourth lowest infield fly rate. Howie Kendrick, Ryan Howard, and Larry Bigby are the only guys who have popped it up in the infield less frequently than Joey Votto in the time that we have batted ball data for. And the stretch from 2009 to 2018, nobody popped up less frequently. We're talking like barely 0.5% of his fly balls were infield flies. It is remarkable. There's been no player. Ryan Howard and Howie Kendrick are the only two in the modern era who can say, I wasted a ball in play. I popped it up in the infield less frequently or as infrequently as Joey Votto, including, yes, four different seasons, three plus the pandemic year, where he did not pop a ball up in the infield the entire season. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Votto having like the infield fly stat is very, it fits Votto's personality, like quirky baseball stat for a quirky baseball guy. But like, I'm happy that as this season has ended and as his career is coming to a close, we've reached a point in baseball discourse where it's not really a debate anymore. Like he's going to be a Hall of Famer. We know it. Like it's advanced to that point where I think like 5 or 10 years ago, we were like, will he be? How many home runs does he need to hit? Like, does he need to boost the RBI total? It's like, no. He's a Hall of Famer. We know it. Like most people, the vast majority of people have come to that conclusion. And that I like that that's almost a guarantee now.
Yeah. And as it should be, we look at whether you isolate first baseman or you use wins above replacement or anything you do, like contextually, given his era of that post steroid era group, the combination of, yes, a good amount of power, elite on base, lots of doubles. By the way, for further context, just because I realize people might not have a mental barometer of how often do infield flies actually happen, about 10% of fly balls hit in baseball are classified as infield flies. So if you had a ball in the air, 10% of the time, it's probably not leaving the infield. Joey Votto was under 1%. 0.7% during that peak that I mentioned, including a whole bunch of zeros. It's crazy.
Yeah, like I'd love to know like what the drivers, like I wish we had more batted ball data, like going back, like I'd love to know bat speed stuff and bat angle and launch angle for back then. I think to get nerdy on this for a minute, to go full Votto, like my guess would be a very flat bat path back then. So a lot of like a low launch, like swing, very flat, a ton of line drives, and just an ability to put the barrel on the baseball, right? And getting those A swings, like just not fooled very often, very flat bat path, catching it deep, and that would, I think, negate the infield flies.
Yeah, to me, it's a I didn't make mistake swings stat. Like, yeah. I didn't mess up. Yeah. We know he's talked about barrel rate a lot over the course of the time where we've had the stats. But I just think it's a no mistake stat. Okay. Before we wrap on Votto, how do you feel about how it ended here? The fact that, you know, the AAA stats weren't where it was. You know, some fans seem to have wanted him to get the token call up, knowing Votto a tiny bit. Maybe he didn't want that. Are you okay with how, you know, how we got to this conclusion without, obviously, we don't have perfect information, but reading the tea leaves that we do have?
I choose to take people at their word, and especially the source. So I'll take Votto at his word, just like I take Chris Bassett at his word. Like I feel like these news stories around the Blue Jays over the last few days or weeks or whatever, everything is just like an ink blot. Like
Rorschach
you
test.
Believe, Yeah, like you believe what you want to believe. If you want to use it as an opportunity to slag some people, you will. I really don't think there's anything here. I think Joey Votto's a proud baseball player, and I think I wrote it yesterday on Twitter. Like, I don't think he would have hated anything more than like a token call up, come up and strike out a couple times or weekly grounder. I think he would have hated that. He's one of the best baseball players of all time, regardless of country. He's one of the three best baseball players that this country's ever produced. I really think he would have hated to come up and get a token call up. And like, when you look at the, you know, I just think, like I said, I think you can, people who want to draw certain conclusions will draw those conclusions. And I just choose to take Votto at his word that, you know, he didn't want this. He didn't feel like he was a major league baseball quality player at this point. I think he holds himself to a pretty high standard. I think he's probably tougher on himself than most people are, obviously. But yeah, like as a Blue Jays fan, as a Votto fan, I think it would have been awesome to see, but it didn't come together for him. So I think rational people take it for what it's worth and move on.
I think with respect to the Rorschach test and extrapolating it to other things, I will just say this. There is a good list of reasons you could be mad for. You don't need to invent new ones or try to find new ones where there's not there. I don't need to get mad about the Votto thing when I've got a long list of things I could pick at. With that said, let's pivot to this team. They lost 11-7 last night. Not a good night for the bullpen. I want to do a little bit of bullpen talk with you because you tweeted out a stat, the Meza, Swanson, Romano drop-off. They gave up 16 homers in 179 innings last year. They've given up 16 homers in 65 innings this year. Their ERA was 251 last year. It's 689 this year. Tim Meza's had a rough go with the Yankees here. Jordan Romano obviously hurt. Eric Swanson was on a bit of an okay run in lower leverage, but had a tough one last night. Man, what do you make of that? I mean, you tweeted the kind of before and after stats out. What do you make of that drop-off for so many key pieces at once in the bullpen?
Yeah, the four most used relievers last year were Garcia, 73 games, Swanson, 69, Meza, 69, Romano, 59. That was a very good bullpen last year. Four guys you could depend on, use every day, or close to every day. And, you know, when you had a chance to win, you had those guys available most of the time, and you knew you could hold a lead. This year, the four most used pitchers in the bullpen are Cabrera, Pop, Richards, and Pearson. Two of those guys aren't with the team anymore.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's like, it's just completely flipped, right? And like, again, like we know bullpens are year to year, the variability's quite high. I don't think anyone could have predicted this amount of variability and everyone's production falling. Like I take, going back on taking people's word, like at their word, I believe Mark Shapiro when he said the other day, like you couldn't account for like this level of, you know, difference in expectations versus production. And I think the bullpen might be like top of the list. Obviously Bo would be up there too, but like you can't, it's so hard to predict that again, like those four guys being so dependable, guys you could lean on last year, and then just getting essentially almost nothing from them. Jimmy was really good to start the year, obviously, but then got hurt and then got traded. So just like the bullpen completely flipping from a top 10 unit last year to, you know, 28th, 29th, or 30th, no matter which metric you use this year, like no one could have predicted. Like there are a lot of reasons, and I think there were a lot of people who said, I don't think they, like there's a good chance they're not going to make the playoffs this year. And that's fine if you predicted that, like bonus points to you. If you predicted that this was going to be how, that the bullpen was going to implode, that the starting pitching was going to be 20th or 21st in the league in terms of value or production, like I don't believe you if you thought it was going to go like this.
No, I think most of the criticisms were they didn't do enough to address the offensive side, which, you know, has played out. And even if you couldn't have, even if I don't think that many people predicted quite the drop off for Springer and certainly not the Bo one, the criticisms that I recall, the reasons the Jays, I think only 40% of people across like Fangraphs, Baseball's Prospectus, ESPN, pick the Jays to make the playoffs, and it was an offensive concern. And then maybe some like, hey, your vet pitchers have pitched a lot. Those were kind of the concerns, not the bullpen. And it's tough. It's a tough one because like, well, what is the solution? it's not to go out and spend a lot on the bullpen, because this is not a Jays. This is a, the extreme level of this in 2024 is a Jays thing, but relief pitchers turning to pumpkins left and right is not a unique thing to the Blue Jays. This is how relievers work. So you kind of don't have a choice but to, yeah, you gotta build depth. You gotta be ready to move off of guys. And even if you're a good team, like every playoff team in baseball went out and tried to acquire more relievers at the deadline. It kind of is what it is. So having said all that, what are you looking for the rest of the way from the guys who are here? There are a couple guys that we could probably pencil into the pen for next year, Chad Green being obviously the chief one. Jordan Romano, they'll maybe have to work out a non-arbitration contract, because I think through arbitration, like, I don't know if you want to pay him $10 million or whatever he's going to end up, but he's probably in the mix in some way. And then probably Cabrera's in there. I mean, I think he's done enough. And then there are a bunch of question marks. So with those other six guys who are in there right now, the other eight guys at AAA who are on the 40-man, what kind of indicators are you looking for? Not that someone would have a job locked down, but that you'd be moderately interested to see how they look in spring.
I'd like to see Little's control, see where his command goes. Like, I think he's going to pitch in, you know, 10, 15 games, something like that, between now and the end of the year. I'd like to see where his control gets to. And for me, it's Swanson. That's the big thing. Like, can he just, yeah, yesterday was a blip. It didn't go well. But can he continue to find some consistency? There's always going to be the odd blip for a reliever. There's a reason they're relievers and not starters. But, you know, can he rebound from this blip and give another, like, five solid outings in a row, build on it? Because that's the piece that you hope is it's a question mark right now, but you hope that he's a guy next year that you hope you can get something out of. So, but other than that, like, you don't really know. Like, you're looking for two or three spots. I don't think it's necessarily four or five. I don't think you want to be even allocating that much money to the bullpen in a free agent market. I do think, like, one thing I'll be looking for potentially this offseason is, you know, all of a sudden the Blue Jays, yeah, they might not have a ton of high-end talent that's young and in position players, but they do have a lot of guys, and they have a lot of guys who can contribute, you know, potentially at the major league level. So one thing I'm interested in seeing is there something that happens where do they move one of their extra position players for a bullpen piece? It's tough because I think so many teams are looking for pitching, and there's always looking for pitching, but who knows? Like, is there a move where there's one of these guys who's at that AAA MLB level who gets squeezed out, or who they envision getting squeezed out? Do they move one of those guys for pitching? So I think that could definitely happen in the winter.
Yeah, I broached that with Ben Clemens yesterday. It was like, I used Addison Barger as the example just to use it. Let's say Loperfido and Wagner are ahead of him for lefty bench roles, et cetera. You know, you could just as easily say David Schneider or you know, you pick your guy. But,
anyone,
yeah. You know, like, and some of these guys have options. They could stay on the 40-man at a AAA depth, but at a certain point, you might have to look at your roster and be like, we got infinite second baseman / left fielders who hit left-handed. You know, let's turn one into a seventh, eighth inning. And Ben Clemens, who is the trade value guy at Fangraphs, was like, yeah, in a vacuum, that's a value loss. Like, a position player with controllability is not as valuable as a reliever. But if that is your roster construction, a guy is not, you know, a sixth bench option in AAA is not helping you nearly as much as a reliever in the majors. So another thing that could happen to the bullpen, and you tweeted about this earlier, and it's starting pitching related. So we know Berríos, Bassett, and Gausman are going to be 3/5 of that rotation, health dependent. Bowden Francis is making a nice case right now, but I would imagine he'll have to go into next spring training and compete for that. Jake Bloss is going to go in and compete for that. Yariel Rodriguez is going to go in and compete for that. Before we get into the relief pitcher component, how comfortable would you be if, like, that was it? And, like, then there's, like, well, Manoah and Tiedemann later in the year, maybe, but probably can't bank on it. Adam Macko, we'll see. Do you think they would you want to add another major league caliber starter to that mix? Or would you focus in on AAA? Like, how comfortable would you be if that was your six competing for five spots?
I really like all those guys, to be clear. I do think you probably, the fact that your two next best guys are both, like, having surgery done this offseason, or have already had it done. I can't remember the specifics, but Tiedemann and Manoah will be factors at some point down the road, but they're your next two best guys. So I would probably, you know, do they sign someone that's a definite starter towards the back end of the rotation to kind of lower the need, or the, you know, the need for all those guys to be good next year? Maybe. Like, I've thought about Nick Pivetta for a while being in that, at that level. He might be too high of a price tag. I think there's also a lot of guys on the free agent market this winter who are like, you know, buy low candidates, or kind of, are they relievers? Are they swingmen? Like, to keep it on the Canadian angle, like, I think about a guy like Soroka a little bit. Like, is that a guy that you bring in and see what happens? And could he be a long man out of the pen? Like, it's all speculative right now, but I think there's a lot of guys at that level. I think, you know, I think a guy like Walker Buehler's interesting, right? Like, who knows? Like, something I've always said in the last little while is free agency is a two-way street. There's got to be interest both ways. But, like, I could see that level, you know, that level of pitcher where they improve their depth. There's not a lot of front-load investment being offered, but maybe you have a guy that could slot in and help out somewhere. So I think it's going to be really interesting this offseason because there are so many different directions this team could go.
And then the other thing to consider with the three starters that we're talking about for these two spots, Bowden Francis will not have options. Yariel Rodriguez, because of the reported terms of the contract they signed him to, will not have options. Jake Bloss will. So if he went, hey, these guys are competing for the rotation spots and that's it, Jake Bloss would be the odd man out on paper right now because he's the only optionable one. However, we've seen Bowden Francis as a reliever. I certainly like him better as a back-end starter than I do as a reliever, at least the way things have played out. Yariel Rodriguez was a reliever in Japan, a pretty like moderate to high-leverage guy. Obviously, with the contract he'd signed, you would prefer him to be a starter. They should give him every chance to be a starter. Would you have some interest in him in a reliever if, say, he looks like, you know, he hasn't been terrible, but like, let's say Bowden Francis looks good, Jake Bloss looks good, or they sign Nick Pivetta, whatever, what would your intrigue level be in Yariel Rodriguez as a multi-inning or leverage bullpen guy if it shakes out that way?
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, like, as you mentioned there perfectly, like, his value is highest as a starter. So with any guy, with any pitcher who has the capability to be a starter, you want to explore that and chase it as far down the road as you can. But, you know, roster construction will dictate some stuff. Performance will dictate some stuff. The likeliest outcome as we stand here today is the rotation is kind of is what it is right now, right? Like, without, if we don't talk about free agents, like, the likeliest outcome is it's these five guys right now with Bloss trying to push his way in, right? But because of the options, because of he hasn't proven it at the big league level yet, like, that's the likeliest scenario. But of those three, I'm most intrigued by Rodriguez as a bullpen guy. I think his stuff might play up if it's only an inning or two or two to three innings. I think the numbers in small samples have shown this year already that he's better one the first time through. I like his stuff. I think he could be that kind of Jimmy Garcia type of guy, like, but even with a little more runway, with a little more innings behind it. Again, like, that's not the most valuable projection of what he could be, but who knows? Resources and other factors might dictate. But I'm intrigued by what it could be. Like you mentioned, what he did on the other side of the ocean. Like, I think he could be good. I think the breaking ball is really good. Do the walks come down if it's just like, hey, pound the zone, give us your best stuff, go whack guys, and give us your best two innings? Like, how does that change his performance? I don't know. But I think it's, again, something interesting to consider. There's flexibility. There's all sorts of things. They've got, you know, they could do all sorts of different things. And that's why, like, that's why this offseason, from literally from the end of the season, on day one, will be very interesting to see how it plays out.
So the other two guys here, Bowden Francis, you and I have talked about a bunch. You had a good thread on the splitter usage before he came out and threw it even more and had the best start of his career. I feel like this week I've talked enough about Bowden Francis. So you had a Jake Bloss thread at Down to Black on Twitter right before you came on here. Today, I mean, the Jays starting Ryan Burr, doesn't sound like Jake Bloss is coming up. They will get a 27th man on Monday. It would be a little weird. Bloss hasn't been, he's only thrown 50 and then 56 pitches. Today's technically his turn. Maybe you could massage some stuff where he's available Monday or just delay it until Monday. I don't know. But we'll see Jake Bloss at some point before the end of the year, I think. What are you looking for, given what he's looked like over those first two AAA starts?
So I dove in to his stuff when he was traded to the Jays, and then also looked at his two starts so far with the Jays just recently. And nothing's really changed from when I first looked at his stuff to looking at it yesterday. It's really good. Fastball command is really, really good. Like, that's what stands out the most for a young pitcher is, you know, it's refreshing as a baseball fan to, like, when he throws his fastball, there seems to be a really good idea of where it's going. He can paint corners. He can work up in the zone. There's a high spin factor to it. It's really good. He's got three different breaking balls that he's throwing a ton. The changeup doesn't do much right now in the small samples that we've seen it. And that's even with the Bisons, but also even in the short major league time he's had, and also in the minors in the Houston organization. I would like my early prediction right now, just knowing this organization, seeing what we've seen from Francis, knowing Kevin Gausman is here. I wouldn't be surprised if he tinkers with a splitter at some point. Maybe he can. Like, not every pitcher can throw a splitter, but I wouldn't be surprised just seeing the changeup and seeing how it hasn't really become something for him yet. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he tinkers with it. And it might be something where he tinkers with it and we never hear about it. It just doesn't work. But I wouldn't be surprised if come March, he's pitching in a, you know, in a start for the Jays in Dunedin and we see a splitter. I wouldn't be surprised by that, but I like him. Like, he's definitely, like, it's 6 2/3 of scoreless innings so far for the Bisons. I think he's too good for AAA. Doesn't mean you need to bring him up right now. Like, I do think we'll see him, and I definitely think he'll be a factor in 25 for sure.
Well, that's exciting stuff there. Okay, we got 3.5 minutes left. So what do you want to do, Ernie or Vlad?
Either or. Two different ceilings, two very different players, but I like both of them. It's you're the host, your choice.
All right, let's do Ernie then, because Vlad's, I mean, we've done Vlad a bunch, and Vlad insists upon himself at this point. Ernie has been very, very good, adding a little bit of power here. He's even taken a walk two games in a row here. When you look ahead to 2025, certainly don't think this lineup's in a place where you could put Ernie Clement in as an everyday guy, but how much do you think he's solidified himself as a major leaguer with what he's been able to show literally as an everyday player for 2 months now?
Yeah, so you mentioned off the top of the segment about how I was away working tennis. And when I came back, like when tennis ended and I flipped on a game and it was Buck and Dan on the call, and they were having a Ernie Clement conversation, and they both were like, this guy's earned a spot for next year. Like, he's, you know, role, how much of a role is still to be determined, but like, he's earned a spot. And I was like, it made me sit back and think. I was like, well, in my opinion, has he? And like, the more you look at it and the more you look at the body of work, the more you look at his production, the more you look at all that stuff, everything he brings to the table, above average base runner, above average fielder, doing more at the plate now. I agree with them. And, like, obviously, like, their opinion carries more weight than mine, but like, he's earned a spot on that roster next year. And like I said, like, the offseason will dictate how much playing time he's got earmarked. Is he the 13th man? Is he, you know, is he a 100-game guy? Like, who knows? Like, we'll have to wait and see. But I think what Clement and Horwitz have proven this year is, like, you need guys like this on good teams. Affordable, dependable, productive players, if not stars, right? Like, if you look at kind of, if you break this season down or this roster down by, like, dollar per war, like, they're the most productive players on the team, Clement and Horwitz, right? And you need guys like that. It's no different than the NBA. It's no different than the NFL. You need guys on low, quote unquote, there's no such thing as entry level, I guess, in Major League Baseball, but you need guys on affordable salaries that can be productive. And those two guys are. And like, you love the mindset they bring. They don't seem overwhelmed by anything, even if they struggle from time to time. So yeah, like, I'm fully on board on both those guys having spots earmarked for 2025. And I like what he's done. You get the feeling with both Clement and Horwitz that, like, regardless of whatever their limitations are as baseball players, they're going to work and work and work to kind of minimize those limitations or make them less of, make them smaller limitations as their careers go on.
All right. Chris Black, producer at Sportsnet, at Down to Black on Twitter. Thanks so much for taking the time out, buddy.
Anytime. Thanks for having me back.
Chris Black, great to have him back. Yeah, it's Ryan Burr starting. It's a TBD on the Angels side. Griffin Canning, it's his day. Maybe they go opener with Griffin Canning. They haven't done that before. But yeah, Griffin Canning has not been particularly good. Reed Detmers is on turn in the minors. He has not been particularly good either at the major league level or the minor league level, even though he has a lot more swing and miss stuff. They could also do a bullpen day. Ronzi Contreras, the only guy for them that got used yesterday because Johnny Cueto out of nowhere gave them some length. So we'll see. We'll see what they do there. It's the first of four. It'll be Bassett against Jack Kahanowitz tomorrow, Bowden Francis against Carson Fulmer, and Kevin Gausman against Tyler Anderson the rest of the series. So we'll at least know who's pitching in those ones. Thanks to Keegan Matheson, Annie Rogers, Eric Kratz, and Chris Black for joining us today. Thank you to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back at 10 a.m. tomorrow to break this one down and set you up for the rest of the weekend. Hope you have a wonderful Thursday.